start with the Mishnah of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph.
Halacha Dalad.
Halacha Hey.
Halacha Hey.
Umotzin al Chametz Rishus.
Where is it? I see Halacha Dalad.
Oh. Turn the page.
Yep, okay.
Okay, this should be my number. Chav Hey there. The king may take on an optional battle. People will die. Right? What is it? A mechemes chova, mechemes mitzvah? That's a war to defeat the seven nations, a war to defeat a Malek, or a war to of defensive nature. Anything else is called an optional war, mechemes rishus. So maybe the king shouldn't fight in a mechemes rishus. What are some of the reasons to fight the Mechemes Rishus?
Why is it Motzi instead of Yotzei?
Motzi et Achirim. It's Binyan Hifil. Motzi Lachmin Arth. He brings others to Mechemes Rishus. Alpi Beis Din Shal Shivim Ve'Echad. But he cannot do this unilaterally. He has to have the approbation of the court of 71.
It sounds like the War Powers Resolution.
Yeah, there's there's certainly a division of powers in Parsha Shoftim, right, between various leadership institutions. Okay. Uporeitz lo derech ve'ein memachin biyado. And when they are on their way to battle, he can... Basically, our Gemara and the Gemara Bava Kamma will understand this to refer to eminent domain. Right? But we'll see from some of the stories in Tanakh that this is not to be practiced... without care and caution. Not in a one-ton manner.
Eminent domain, when it refers to a king, is that refer to his own expediency or his own personal
right, because it says paretz lo geder. But lo derech. Derech ha-melech ein lo shir. The king's highway has no measure. In other words, it could be as wide as he wants, as far as he wants. The Gemara will explain what that means. The Chol Ha'am bozes in and osnin lufanav v'huno tel chelik barosh. And when they despoil, they give him the first dibs. He goes to the spoils first and decides what he wants. He can take anything first. Okay, yeah? We'll have proofs for all of these things. Let's do the Gemara in Sanhedrin first for a moment, and we'll get back to where we want to be. Because it says in the Tanakh, take a look at, we have the Pesukim on this page. It says Dichsiv al piv yetsu v'al piv yavou. This is a pasuk at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Right, and Hashem says through the Urim v'Tumim and through the Kohen Gadol.
At the bottom of the page.
This is how we know that he has to be involved with the, he can't make the decisions himself. And it says Uporitz lasos lo derech. Notice who is the man from Megillas Rus that David is descended from.
What?
At the end of Rus, it starts to give a lineage of David, starting with.
Wow. No, before Boaz.
Well before Boaz.
Well before. Well, I mean,
Peretz,
right?
And how did he get his name? Because he's Maparatzda. So the king says that it's in his veins. It's in his blood. There's even a bit of Moab in his blood. Okay. All right, so, Dichsiv. Okay, see?
But sentence, the one at the bottom that they're quoting, isn't that referring to, that they'll go out according to his mouth? That's not Eleazar's mouth?
actually according to either Elazar or whoever is reading the Urim Batumim. The point of that is just trying to say, not so much that the king gets to go out Rishus. That has nothing to do with this pasuk. This pasuk is talking about the king. But that the king cannot do it himself.
Okay. Right.
The king must rely on some other recourse. Now, why didn't it say Urim Batumim? Because we didn't have Urim Batumim at that. I mean, well, when kings went out in Tanakh, they did appeal to an ephod or the like. They did inquire of God. In other words, but the point is that the king may not do this himself.
What's the determining factor in the time of mitzvah? Is that that a navi has to call for it? Like, how do we know what a defense for means?
I mean, you can have let the military strategists determine that, but was the 67 war a defensive war or an offensive war?
It's not Muhammad's mitzvah. Defensive doesn't automatically make it Muhammad's mitzvah.
If there are lives to be saved, that's what becomes a Muhammad. It's not a saved mitzvah.
That's a mitzvah, but I think the definition of Muhammad's mitzvah is where there was a tzibur. So, like, Mechias Amalek or Mechias Shibasamalek.
Adirava, there's. There's a question whether Kibush Yochid Shmei Kibush, whether David, who enhanced the borders, so does that mean that now that has automatic Kedusha Eretz Yisrael or not? We paskin somewhat. There are lands of Israel. They have some, like Shemitah, sometimes not the same. There's Tumas Hamimim, but it has laws of Shemitah. But we even have debates about what comprises that land to be conquered in fulfillment of a mitzvah, right? But included in this is a Muhammad where they come upon us. In other words, see what the nafkamina is, the Mishnah in Masechet Sota. The Kohen only announces who just planted the vineyard, who just got married, right? In the Muhammad's Rishus. He does not say that in the Muhammad's mitzvah. So there's a difference right there.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Bimeya, in the Yeshiva Shabbat that does not send their boys off to war, aren't they sort of depending upon the situation not being Muhammad's mitzvah, which would mean defensive war? Simply being a defensive war does not, by their definition, mean that it's Muhammad's mitzvah.
They don't believe that
there are those who feel that the leadership in Israel today has a din of Nasi, or they laugh that off. They don't think that this is.
No, but this was pre-Malchus, and it was in the time of the show.
Well, actually, who then only applies to Malchus?
Well, at the time of the Shoftim, actually, the time of Yoshua, there was the original Kibush Haaretz.
Presumably, at that time, you didn't have guys saying they don't want to go to the army.
So the people who today say that, you know, they might argue, Adrabba, but declaring a state made you have to fight these wars. If you didn't declare a state, we wouldn't have these wars. Right? So, I don't know if this does take talking like that, but I think their refusal to serve in the army has a lot of other debates. The Rambam, who was against people being paid to learn, he was against the Kolel movement very much, and his Talmud Torah said it's a Chil Hashem. The Rambam, however, in the last Halach in Hilchos Shemitah in Vyoblos, says that a person who dedicates him or herself, by the way, he said, to fully spiritual pursuits, that person deserves to be supported by the community, don't have to pay taxes, don't have to pay for waterworks, we should divert the water for their property, and they don't have to serve in the army. But the description that the Rambam really makes for this type of person, and I remember Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote an article like that about this years ago. He said, I don't think there are 5 or 10 people like this in the whole land. I know I'm not one. I go to Miluim, you know.
Why? What qualities?
Not me. What
qualities did the Rambam require?
He said they're Kodesh Kodashim. They don't want any physical. If I'm being supported by the community, I'm not looking for anything extra. I measure my water, I measure my bread. Anyway, as we sidetrack too much, but let's just say that today's situation does not consider the poritz geder, but I think eminent domain is practiced universally. I'm sure it's practiced in totalitarian nations, it's practiced, I'm sure, in socialist nations, they're taking things away from you all the time. they own it all. I mean, right? So, but it's practiced even in a place like ours. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's see how Agamara works this through. Let's continue. Right? So, how do you know that he gets to despoil first? Tirsiv, Nagul ifnei ha-mikneh v'yemru zeh shel al David. It's a pasuk. It's at the bottom of the page. It's in Shmuel Aleph. Okay. V'abakor Nagul ifnei ha-mikneh ha-hu v'yemru zeh shel al David. Right? He wasn't even king yet. But he was crowned king. Remember we had a debate earlier about whether David was actually king or not when Navigail came to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Who haya im David? Now this Bepas Domim. There was a place where he went called Be'efes Domim. So, but there's another place in Divrei Yamim where he went. The place is called Pas Domim. Right. I'll have to. We're going to see actually this part of the sources I gave. I prepared for you. All right. Rav Yochanan Amar b'Chakal Sumkata. Of Shmuel Amar Shemisham Nifsaku Domim. Right, so this place is being darshaned. Right, Pas Domim Kimashmao, that the field was filled with red lentils. Okay, remember lentils are red. Esav says, and Rav Shmuel says Misham Nifsaku Domim. Right. Nifsaku Damim, which means that David, someone else who wanted to do what David did there would have to pay money. Damim means money, and David didn't. Because to practice eminent domain, now I think in our government, if the government wants your land to build a tracks for a rail, they have to pay you, no?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They would certainly have to pay. There's certain rules about
China.
China does not
values,
have the concept of eminent domain, which is astounding.
What does that mean?
Like, if the Chinese government wants to build a road,
mm-hmm.
and there's one person that doesn't want to sell their house, and I've seen pictures of this. I mean, they're a totalitarian government, so they will put the highway around the house, so there's that one house standing in the middle of the road. But they have no right to tear your home down.
They wonder remember that thing a couple of years ago where they made that giant river that like, moved whole villages?
Well, that's what I've been saying. We took a trip down the Yangtze River. They were building this huge dam, and we saw where whole towns were being moved up, rebuilt higher up.
Mm-hmm.
People who lived in their home families for centuries.
Okay, the Gemara right now is saying that when the king... when the king practices eminent domain, he does not have to pay the money back. That's what we're saying right now. Okay, Vaplishtim nesfu begomer. The Plishtim gathered to fight. Rav Yaakov de Kfarchanan Amar. Okay, here's where we have to start looking at some other sources. You see Brava Kamat of Samach and Samach Aleph. Right. Okay. Now I gave you two Tanakh sources. One, Divrei HaYamim, there's a box there, right? You see it? And if you turn the page to the back of that, it says Shmuel Bet. You see that? Okay. So I'd like to just before we continue with our Gemara in the Bavli in Yerushalmi. Let's read just these two portions of Divrei HaYamim. Divrei HaYamim, you know, is a retelling of Shmuel and Malachim with some differences. Here we're going to see some significant differences and some quite insignificant differences, but differences nonetheless. It says, Ve'elim ispar ha-giborim asher le-David. You see it? Mm-hmm. Everyone, you see some names? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Hu orer et chanito al shlosh me'od chalal b'pam echas. Wow. He was able to swing his some kind of very heavy spear or something at 300 men. V'acharav Elazar ben Dodo achochi hu b'shlosh ha-giborim. Hu yom David b'pas domim. That's our pasuk. He was with David in a place called Pas Domim. V'aplishtim nesfu sham la-milchama. V'atihi chalkas ha-sedem v'layos se'orim. And the place was filled with barley. They almost assume you play Plishtim, but the Plishtim got the upper hand. Vayisyatzvu b'socha chalka vayitzilu vayeku es Plishtim. They met in a certain place and they were saved from the Plishtim. Vayosha Hashem tishua gedola, and it was a great salvation. Vayodu shloshem min ashloshim rosh al atzur al David amirat adulam umachane Plishtim chona ve'emek refaim. This, you know, Emek Rephaim. It's the same place that's called Emek Rephaim today. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm talking about near Bethlehem. For David Oz Bamitzuda. Yeah, of course. And David was in the stronghold. And it's Siv Plishtim Oz Beis Lachem. And it shows that Emek Rephaim is right near Beis Lachem. See how close it is? Kibbutz Eretz Lavor Frata. It's right outside Yerushalayim. Vayitav David Vayomar. And David had a desire and said, "Mi yeshkeni mayim mibor Beis Lachem? Who can get me water from this pit in Beis Lachem?" Asher Bashar, it's at the gate. Ve'ivku'u ha'shlosha b'machane Plishtim, ve'yishavu mayim mibor Beis Lachem. These three risked their lives to get to the water in Beis Lachem with the Plishtim were. Asher Bashar, ve'yisu ve'yaviu el David. They were at the gate, and they brought it to David. Ve'lo avod David l'shtosam, ve'yinasecho sam l'shem. David refused to drink of this water, and he made a libation of it before God. Should I drink the blood of these men who risked their lives? They risked their lives to get me this water. I didn't mean for them to get water this way. I just said, anyone have a canteen of water? I'm thirsty. But he refused to drink it. That's what the three mighty men did. Now turn. Now the names are slightly different. There it was Chachmoni, here it's Tachkemoni. Right? Have you ever schooled by that name?
Right,
so a lot of the names are different. Right? The names of the amount of people in the battle, the numbers in the battle are different.
Okay. Is that the Shodesh?
Mm-hmm. Okay, the Shmuel Bet tells you a little extra information that Ibrahim does not give. Okay,
how should we understand this when two different sections give different names for people or different numbers? I mean, different interpretations.
Ibrahim does that a lot.
It happens all the
time. There are books dedicated to that alone. So I have it in my office called Makabilot in the Kruf. These are all the differences between Ibrahim and the other books. Look at this simple difference here. It says, look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. V'acharav shama ben agei harori v'yesvu plishtim l'chaya v'atisham chalkas hasodem alaya adoshim. Remember what the field was filled with in Dibra Yamin?
Barley.
Yeah. Here it's filled with lentils. V'am nos mipnei plishtim. And they were dispersed because of the plishtim. Basically,
adashim is
lentils.
It's lentils.
The real name it was barley. Uh-huh. Okay. The David, look, skip down to the middle part of this page. The David oz ba mitzuda, umatzav plishtim oz beis lochem. Vayisaveh David. Small differences about how things are spelled. Yomar mi ashkeni mayim mi bor beis lochem asher b'shar. Who can get me water from the Bor Beis Lechem? Okay. Ve'ivku shloshes gibrim b'machaneh plishtim ve'yishavu mayim mibor Beis Lechem asher b'shar ve'yisu b'yaviv al David v'lo aval l'shtofsam ve'yaseichu sam l'Hashem. Ve'imar chalilu li Hashem ve'yasisi zos hadam ha'anashim ha'olchim nafshosam v'lo aval l'shtofsam ela asu shloshes ha'giborim. Okay. Now go back to our Gemara, please, in the Yerushalmi. Okay, so see where we left off. Plishtim nesfu. The Plishtim gathered. Rav Yaakov to Kfar Chana Namar. Adoshin hayu. Ela shahisa anavosh shalahem yofeh kishel seorin. What were they? Were they actually lentils, or were they barley? So, actually, they were lentils. Right. They were, in truth, lentils. And that's generally how we resolve contradictions between Divrei Hayamim and Shmuel, or Divrei Malachim, is to say that the Divrei Hayamim Pasuk is is somewhat is poetic or to be darshaned. Mm-hmm. Okay. It means that the kernels of the lentils were as big as the kernels of the barley. I don't know if you've ever seen kernels of tuber. Barley kernels are much bigger. And there, so it just means that the dashim were as rich as so. Rav Levi, Elu hin plishtim sheyu ba'in zekufin kisa'orin ba'ochin lehen nemuchin ke'adashim. Another drash is that it actually refers to the psukim. Both psukim refer to the plishtim. When the plishtim attacked, they stood upright like barley stalks. But they stooped low in defeat when we finally got to them like lentils. Okay, you got it? So it's not like one is right and one is just a drash. They're both right in some form.
So some connection to Esav here with the others?
I don't think so. I'd love to find one, but it's there. Kesuv echad omer batisham chalkas ha-sedeh malei ha-sorim uksiv malei ha-adoshim. But Shabbos, you're darshaning these things. And that's what you do. You've been doing. Right? So the contradictory psukim are actually cited here. Right? Rav Shmuel ben Nachman amar, shana echas ha-sa u-shtei sados hayu. Achas sorim ve-achas adoshim. All right. Actually, we don't have to make a drash. It's not the exact same story. It's the same battle, but the battle took place over 2 years. And at one point, the place was filled with lentils. Another point, the place is filled with barley. Even here, where you
crop rotation.
Crop rotation, rotate the crops, right?
But the same exact thing happened.
Yeah. Okay, now, here is finally where we're getting to our issue. David needed to destroy these crops. For whatever reason, he had to travel through them. This is where the eminent domain comes in about the crops. Okay. Pshita li la'avid v'litein damim. David says, I have to get through this. It seems to me that what I should do is to pay the owner of the field for the crops that I might be ruining. Right? Even though we learned before that technically speaking he doesn't really have to, but he is ready to. Ready to pay for it. Dilma pshita lei la'avid shelo litein damim, eze mehen yovad, ve'eze mehen yitein damim, shel adoshim v'shel sa'orim. So David was actually asking. Remember now, but the Gemara says that these are two different. Now we're saying it's two different fields altogether.
Right.
But which is better to destroy, a field of barley or a field of lentils? He needed to destroy one of the fields and to maintain the other. So which to destroy, the lentils or the barley?
I think the lentils are worth more, but I don't know what that's the only consideration.
He says, Elo shel adoshim machol adam v'shel sa'arim machol behima. People eat lentils, animals eat barley. You don't have to remove challah from lentils, but you do have to remove challah from grain, and barley is a grain. Right? Ain omer ba minada mimena sorim omer ba mimena. You can't bring omer from lentils, but you do bring the minchas omer from barley. Right? Mm-hmm. So this is just another solution of why it says the two different fields. Rabbanin amrim sode achas u'shtei shonim hayu. The rabbis disagree. They said he wasn't debating between two fields at the same time. It was one field, but it was over. The battle was over a number of years, and it won. And there was crop rotation, as we said before. Hayelamad mishalesh takeid ve'en l'minin mishna lechavirta. Right. So. He said, the Gemara doesn't mention all of the differences between Dashim and Orim, the ones that might make him determine which one to destroy and which one to keep, right? Right, there were two crops for two separate years. So why did David need to ask this question about which one to save?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
So he says, well, if you told me 1 year to destroy, I'm able to destroy the barley, then maybe the situation is different if it's lentils. Right? Maybe maybe if you would let me destroy lentils, it doesn't necessarily mean I could destroy saurim.
If this is a military necessity, then it's not really an eminent domain issue per se. It's an issue of saving lives.
It still needs permission from the planner.
Right, we're going to see where our Gemara is turning with this, and we're going to see an interesting difference between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli. But right now, the Gemara's conclusion is that David wants to pay. And I don't want to take this from its owner, even though I'm in the heat of battle. Right? I don't want to make good on it. Notice, I think we mentioned this last week, that the laws of Baal Tashchis are taught in the context of battle. Right? Where does the Torah tell us not to be wasteful? In Pasha Shoftim, in the middle of the discussion of battle. And then it gives you even though how much you have to be careful for one lost life that's not accounted for. He dies in between two cities, right? That's in the middle of two Parshios that begin, Ki Seitzele Milchama Aloi Vecha. Right? There's a Pasha like that begins in Pasha Shoftim. Okay. Let's see if we can go to the Bava Kama source now, please. I have it outlined at the bottom there by Tavet David. You see it? Okay. What was the Tava for? For water, right? My coming by Eli, what was David wanting there? Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman, Tamun ve'esh kami by Eli. Ikra Rav Yehuda, Ikra Rav Banan. So, he actually had there was a question he'd asked. He had a shayla about Tamun, something that is buried underground, with respect to esh. Is the halacha like Rav Yehuda, that he's chayev, or halacha is like Rav Banan, that he's potter? If you burn something, you should be responsible for things that get in the way of the fire in a normal way. But what if that fire spreads to destroy something underground? So, all right, Rav Yehuda says, it doesn't matter, he lit the fire, whatever that fire destroys, he's chayav. But there's another shita that he's potter. Okay, what does that have to do with our case? Let's see. Because David is about to, he wants to destroy something. Upashtulei mai de pashtulei, and they had a discussion about this. Right, Rav Huna Amar Gdishim de Saorim de Yisrael Havu. There were fields of barley that belonged to Jews in Yerushalayim. Davu matmere plishtim behu. Kami bayalahe mau lahatzil atzma b'mamon chaberu. And the plishtim were hiding, and were hiding in wait. Right, amongst the tall stalks, right? And he wanted to know, can I take down these stalks and help to save my soldiers by destroying the mammon of my chaver? Okay. So they sent to David. That's the water he's thirsting for, the apsak. Let's see the whole thing.
It's a matter of saving lives. It shouldn't be a question at all.
Take a look. Look what they told him. Asur lahatzil atzmo b'mamon chaveiro. You can't save yourself. If you're with two people, if you're with another person in a desert, and he has a canteen and you don't, can you steal it from him?
No, but it's his mamon chaveiro. This isn't the life of yours.
That's mamon. Water is mamon. Can I steal his... I'm not killing him. I'm just stealing his water.
Yeah, but in this case, you're destroying his... And the
chaver would survive without the water?
Maybe not. I don't know. It's grumble. Well,
that's the implication.
Yeah, of course. I know. Everyone agrees you can't take a knife and kill him and say, okay, now I'll take your water, because you're dead anyway, so I might as well drink your water. Anyway, the answer they gave him was Asur lahatzil atzmo b'mamon chaveru. Cannot save yourself But it sounds like a Kantian kind of categorical imperative.
Who's the amorphous?
Yeah, that's right.
Doesn't make sense.
But
they gave
an answer. But that's true about a head yod. You're the king. You can light this fire and you don't have to even pay back. In Mochenda, no one can object. Right? Rabbanani Tema Rabba Bar Mori Amru, Gedishim de Saorim de Israel Habu, Ugedishim de Adoshim de Plishtim. The barley belonged to the Jews, the lentils now, Tobin, this might be coming to, towards Esav, possibly a little bit. And the Gedish of the Plishtim, the Adoshim belonged to the Plishtim, become Ibayale. Maholi told Gedishim shall Saorim de Israel, detain Lifne Behemto. Amanas l'shalim gedishim shel adoshim deplishtim. So here we are near the gedishim of the barley stalks, and we have to feed our animals. We don't have access now to the lentil stalks, to the lentils. What we're going to do is, when he asked the shaila, can we feed our animals the barley that belongs to the Jews, and with the intent to take the lentils from the Plishtim and pay them back. Okay.
To pay Chokhuli. Plishtim back.
So, to pay back the owners of the lentils of the barley that we used for the animal. Uh-huh. Chokhuli, they sent back. Chavol Yashiv Rasha Gzeila Yishalem. Whoa, they quote the pasuk in this pasuk. It sounds like Mishnah, but it's actually in Yechezkel, right? All right. So they responded to him that it's sort of like you steal from one to pay the other. It's you're still a Russia. Okay, the answer is no. Afa pisha gzela mishalem Russia hu. Even if you would pay back, it's still rishus. L'chutz b'tok the king away. Avol ato melech ato melech paretz lasos l'derech v'in mochen b'yado. Again, we tell you, you're king. You could do this.
This must have been just a matter of expediency, as opposed to like military necessity.
This is a highly midrashic way to approach these verses here, but we're still getting at a morality of war fighting. Let's see how this is going. Bishlo lamanda malach lufe haynu dichsiv chad kro. We understand he's trying to make a drash for the lentils and the barley. Let's explain why it said both of them. This is a very different answer than the Yerushalmi gave to this question, right? We didn't see this answer in the Yerushalmi. El lamanda amar lamakle mayi bayalehu lahani trekrai. This is something that actually appeared before our Gemara, but that means that he the question was about burning it. Maybe he was talking about burning, but at the top, burning and causing damage underground. Mm-hmm. How do we answer the contradiction between the barley and the lentils according to that? Amalu dehavin nami gedishim da adoshim di Israel dehavu mitmeri bu plishtim. Right. So okay, these were two different fields, some owned by the Jews and some owned, and both some lentils were also owned by Jews. Okay. Turn the page. So take a look at the middle of the third line, which says Bishlal Malamandam, and it's just back and forth about whether how to answer the contradiction between the lentils and the barley. But here's where we get to our point. David refused to drink the water. What does that mean? You're telling me that there's Isser involved, you're telling me that there's Rishus involved, you're telling me even though all this is true, I'm king, but there's still something wrong, I refuse to drink the water. So, you see what the water means. He poured the water down and on the ground and refused to drink of it. It means that he refused to avail himself of the psak that the king is allowed to either, they have four or five different interpretations, ruin the barley in order to pay back the wheat, ruin the lentils in order to pay back the barley you used, or any other such psak involving eminent domain. And the spilling of the water on the ground is symbolic of refusal to accept this psak, which is really where our Yerushalmi is going. So take a look, come back to Yerushalmi. It says, remember in the beginning, the Plishtim got the upper hand, and then Hashem sent Teshua Gedola, this big Teshua, in order to save the remaining Jews. Right? It says, Chasub Echadomer Vayatziluha, Bechasub Echadomer Vayatzilo. Can you see the Aleph in the base? Vayatziluha. And in the other pasuk it says, Vayatzileho. Right? Now, it's really not only on the word Vayatziluha. You see that there's a full difference between Aleph and Bet. Aleph is in plural, and Bet is in singular. See, Vayisyatzvu, Vayisyatzev, you see it? That's the difference. Kosubachodo merva yitziluva, kosubachodo merva yitzileho. Elmalameit shechazira lebaleho, vayiso chaviva leho alav, kisodem malea charkom. So, is it David that's saving it, or is it the owner of the field that's saving it? Charkom is the most expensive thing you can grow in a field. It doesn't grow easily.
Which?
Right? Charkom is
saffron.
It's very very expensive, very much in demand growth. And Mara is again making a drash out of this, that each person loved what was in the field. It's sort of like going back to Navot. I think what our Gemara is really deep down doing is that to know that there's another story in Tanakh of a king who, remember the Vayitaveh? The whole story started with Vayitaveh. He had a desire for someone else's land, and his wife was the one who went about getting it for him. You all know what story I'm talking about, right? The Nachum in the vineyard.
Isn't that an unusual terminology for somebody wanting water?
Yeah. Yeah, so it means that's where Gemara elaborates to make it something else. Okay? So this land was so beloved to its owner, and if eminent domain is wrong, it's wrong no matter how much the owner loves the land. What David did to Bathsheba's husband is wrong whether they had a good marriage or not. Remember we talked about that? That's an Asher. Okay, so... let's just finish from the lines here to get to the Mishnah. Right. What was it that David desired there with the woman? He said, "Ain mayim al Torah." He was asking a halachic shayla. Why did three men have to get him water? Because you cannot
make a ruling
like this with less than a quorum of three. David refused to drink. He did not want it to be determined by his actions and his name that this unsavory rule that I can just take the land because I can pour it together. He poured the water on the floor just to show that I'm not happy with such a psak. Kavat masechet ledorot. That's our Mishnah, right? He can make breaches to make roads for himself. It was, remember, the time of David, his entire kingdom was during the time of Heter Bamos. It was Sukkos, and the water that he spilled on the floor was for Nisuch HaMayim. At that time, you didn't need a Mizbeach for your Kabanos, right? You can do whatever you want. Now, while it's true that the Nisuch HaMayim had to be done in the place where the Aron was, right? There was a Mizbeach. At this time, it was in a place called... Nov was destroyed already, right? Shiloh was destroyed, Nov was destroyed. The place that's left was Givon.
nisuch without the Aruch?
Givon. You can
have nisuch without the Aruch?
I mean with the Aron is called the Mishkan. The Mishkan stood at this time at a place called Givon. The Nisuch HaMayim wasn't for everyone to do themselves in a private bamach. It was a tekes in the Mizbeach. What I meant by the Aron is the place where the Aron is kept. Okay, so Vakapora says it's not talking about a shiloh about eminent domain. It's talking about service on Sukkos. Right. Okay, so according to you, that he wasn't asking a shayla to be kovei ledoros about eminent domain. Why did he need three people? Echad horeg veechad mefane harugim veechad machnis tzluchis b'tahara. Listen, we know they are in battle, right? But we need three to set things up straight, and one to get a pitcher. Bitahara to bring the water. Kasuvet chadomer bayinasech osam lashem. Kasuvet chadomer bayasech. Why bayinasech and bayasech? Truly, they're the same word. But what's it? You know, means to pour. Mandamar bayasech misayale the rabchia barba. Mandamar bayinasech misayale the bar kapara. Right. Okay. So if you remember, bar kapara said it was because of the chag. So it's called Nisuch HaMayim. You see it? Nisuch HaMayim. The one who says that it was about a question about eminent domain, that's Vayasech. That's just, not necessarily Nisuch HaMayim, even though in Pshat it's the same word, really. The Nun just falls out. Right? You know what I'm saying? Vayipol. You have to say Vayinpol? Okay, but that's just a machlokas. So the two words represent these two opinions.
So according to this opinion, these two sources in Tanakh are both referring to a non-existent story.
The two sources in Tanakh, now the Gemara is saying, refers to two different stories. The Divrei story is saying something different. One says it has to do with a question about them in the domain, and one says, much, it's all drash. And one says it's talking about a
Sukkot celebration.
Something of a Sukkot celebration.
Pouring water.
That's all. Let me just finish the Mishnah, Moshe. What do you want to do with this, Moshe?
Is this sort of like a Shir HaShirim thing where there is no pshat and there really is no bor and they didn't actually go, they didn't actually fight their way into the Philistine camp to get this pitcher of water? And they just, this is all just, you know, allusions to a shaklavatarya that David is having with his basted.
I don't have a guy at the end of this story saying, come on guys, Amy Kuri is saying it, the Pshuto. That goes without saying. If you looked in Meforshim at Shmuel Bet or Dibra Yamim on this, you know, they're going to tell you it's about some soldiers of David that risked their lives to get him some water. But nonetheless, this may still be the Psak Halacha. You know, the Rambam describes the laws of kings, and he has a section on eminent domain. He will use these sources to determine what is the... And our Gemara is just hinging it so you can remember. What did David mean? What did it mean that David spilled the... It means he didn't want to rely on that Psak. You know what I'm saying? But it still means that the rabbis decided to... who codified these laws... decided to codify them in light of this Agadah.
So, the rabbis are imagining that King David is having the shaklavatarya.
Okay.
Would that be a safe...
Yeah, this is not...
They would not insist that the...
Yeah, I mean, if you're wondering, how come no one in these... You know, there are three places in Shas where someone is so taken up with a drash of a pasuk that he says, I can't accept this. Amy Kuri, Amy Nefshuta, what are you doing? But there are thousands of agadotas just like this that say, come on, what are you talking about? Like, how did Yaakov not know he was with Leah and not Rachel? Mm-hmm. So it's probably bothering you, right? Mm-hmm. So you probably never heard of a medrash that says that Rachel was actually under the bed talking to Yaakov.
Right.
And he heard her voice. He knew the difference between the voices. Right? So do you accept it? Is that Pshat? What's that Bala Medrash trying to do? He's trying to figure out how...
It was dark. They didn't have electric lights.
All right. Anyway, let's just finish. I want to... Two more lines. So it goes, Rav Huna b'shem Rav Yossi, right? It says, Hilchos Shvuyim Nitzrucholo. Rav Shem Bar Rabbi Omer Binyan Deis HaMikdash Nisaveh. Right. He said he had other things about whether he could take prisoners from the Plishtim in order to get leverage, whether Taiva to build the Beis HaMikdash, because in the next parak in Tanakh he asks Nason to build the Beis HaMikdash, right? In the next story after he brings back the Aron. So that's just what's the Taiva he had. Right? And I just collected one last thing for you. Take a look at this. Have you ever been to the Old City? Think of you're in the Rova, right? You're coming in from the steps. So you're going through that sort of some narrow place where you have some ATM machines and you have some shops and some... there's a Zislik there now. There's a... You know what I'm talking about, right? I'm looking at this source right here. The very last source we didn't do yet. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, when you want to go to the Rova, you have to turn left, right? Uh-huh. To see the Ramban Shul, if you walk, you know, a little to the left and go straight, you're going to run into the Rambans and the new renovated shul. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. They renovated it now. You don't just have that thing. You have the whole big shul is back, is there now. Yeah. You've seen it, no? Mm-hmm. Right?
No.
Now, don't go into the Rova. Instead, go turn right. His residence is there, right?
Uh-huh.
There's a little cafe up there with some umbrellas there. Keep turning all around, and you will come up to an archaeological dig right now. It's been there for years. And I would like to suggest that dig describes Yeshayahu's complaint in Pesukim. He says, he's describing the Elem Nasa Ashba Berechev Adam Parashim. He's describing the onslaught of the Assyrians on their way down to Yerushalayim. The word got out, they're coming down to this. This is well after they already destroyed the 10 tribes. And scattered them. And Yeshayahu is complaining to Chizkiyahu. It says, "Vesbotei Yerushalayim," on the underlying portion, "Sfartem vatitetsu habotim levatzer hachoma." And you are destroying homes to put up your wall. That wall has been found now.
Oh, that's sure.
It's called the broad wall,
the thick one.
Nehemia refers to this wall. And you can see what Yeshayahu is describing from that place where they let you look down. There are little rooms all over on both sides of the wall.
Uh-huh.
You see little rooms. He just built it right through houses. And Yeshayahu didn't like it.
And this has to do also with the eminent domain.
Yes, he felt feverishly that he has to build this wall to keep the Assyrians out. Remember the Gemara says Chizkiyahu did three things that he agreed with, three things he didn't agree with, and how he cut off the water supply for them, right? So Yeshayahu doesn't like that he is taking this, he was trying to tell him, just have faith in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, he's going to save you from the Assyrians. He did in the end. Remember the Assyrians all died, they died just suddenly, and then, that you can take literally. The Assyrians were what we see from their own descriptions, what they used to do in battle. The Assyrians brought in many, many thousands of women to service their soldiers.
Okay.
Yeah. You just spread one nice Ebola virus in there, and they will die like flies. Even in an Assyrian record, they describe 135,000 soldiers dying just out of nowhere. Strong soldiers one day, 2 days later they're frothing at the mouth and they're going and spreading all throughout the camp. So in the Tanakh it says the angel of death killed them. In the Tanakh it's 180,000. But anyway, so you see an interesting possibility of what this wall was, and that Yeshayahu didn't like the fact that the king was relying on such eminent domain. However, next 2 weeks I will be, predisposed. But keep in touch, because I'll be through the office describing what maybe we could do something in the house. 2 weeks, we'll see what's going on.
Okay.